In 1901, Milwaukee native Lizzie Kander was teaching kosher cooking classes to immigrants at the Milwaukee Jewish Mission. The women copied down the recipes, but to Kander, this felt like wasted time.
Kander envisioned compiling the recipes and household tips into a pamphlet to sell to the community and in the process raise money for Milwaukee's urban poor.
The Settlement Cookbook would go on to become the most successful charitable cookbook in American history with 40 editions and over 2 million copies sold.
It was an influential cookbook for immigrant women reflecting upper middle class lifestyles.
Like the recipe for grapefruit, which shows how much food presentation mattered.
Remove from the skin the cells and juice. Add a little sugar, chopped pineapple, and a few maraschino cherries. Serve very cold in thin glasses, surrounded with crushed ice or in fruit shells.
Our next guest has studied the book's evolution over nearly a century. Nora Rubel is a professor in the Department of Religion and Classics at University of Rochester. Her new book is called Recipes for the Melting Pot, The Lives of the Settlement Cookbook. She starts by recounting how she first learned of the cookbook.
I was in grad school. I was working on other projects, but I was very interested in religion and food and ethnicity and immigration. And when you read particularly Jewish memoirs or secondary sources about Jewish immigration, this cookbook kept coming up. I thought, this seems to be important, but then I couldn't find a lot written on it. There was a little bit, but really not a ton of scholarship on this thing that seemed to be important to a lot of people. And I'm Jewish, but since I don't have like American ancestry, I asked my other American Jewish friends and they were like, oh yeah, I grew up with that. Oh yeah, my grandmother had that cookbook. I love it. I'm like, do you cook from it? They're like, no, but it's important that I have it. So I just started digging and I became fascinated by it.
You quote this magazine writer in 1965 who declares, there are two things no bride should be without. One, of course, is a bridegroom. The other, as every wise Milwaukee housewife knows, is a copy of the Settlement Cookbook. How did this cookbook take hold and become such a staple not only in Milwaukee kitchens, but across the country and even in other parts of the world?
Yeah, I mean, it went everywhere. And part of it had to do with its emphasis on the test kitchen. A lot of people felt that this was a cookbook that no matter what you did, if you followed the recipe, you would end up with something good. And there was this kind of legend around it, particularly in Milwaukee, about the way that Lizzie Kander, the editor and the head of the Settlement House where it came out of, the way that she had produced this book in consultation with both her students and with her friends and social acquaintances.
Can you talk more about Lizzie's Settlement House? What happened in these houses?
So Lizzie Kander ran a settlement house in Milwaukee. The settlement houses were a means of welcoming and helping the new immigrants in our cities to acculturate, to learn English, to learn American manners and mores, essentially keep the kids off the streets and turn the immigrants into good American citizens. Lizzie's house was geared towards Jewish immigrants, and she had a kosher cooking class, which was important because a lot of other settlements didn't have any kind of kosher facilities.
And she had the only professional kosher kitchen, you say, outside of New York.
Correct. Yes. So wow. It was a big deal that she was willing, despite the fact that she was a Reformed Jew and did not keep kosher at all, that she wanted to meet these students where they were and teach them how to cook with American ingredients and how to keep house here. But, you know, she wanted them to feel comfortable. So this was actually kind of unique in the settlement movement. And this cookbook came out of these classes. At the time, community cookbooks were really popular with women's groups. I'm sure your listeners have probably these spiral-bound church volumes or, you know, community neighborhood fundraising cookbooks. So this was something that she thought, oh, I can do this. And the legend is that she became tired of the students having to write down all of the recipes and that she thought, okay, well, this is taking up too much time. Why don't we make a pamphlet that we can sell that will have the recipes in it, and we can sell it to the students for very little and then also raise money. And she went to the board of the Milwaukee Jewish Mission, which is what it was called at the time, and asked for $18 to print it. And they said, no, that sounds very extravagant. But we would also be very happy to, shall you go ahead with this, share in your profits. So she creates this pamphlet. Half of it is the recipes from the cooking classes, and half of it is sort of recipes that she and her friends like. And then she sells it for 50 cents at the Boston store. It gets picked up in Chicago. People become crazy for it. Sells out of its first 500. They have to do another printing. And then in 1903, they did a real cookbook. 9 years later, she bought those men at the Milwaukee Mission a new building.
Wow.
With the profits.
Wow.
So it's a really kind of amazing story. And it went through 40 editions.
Mm. A couple words in your book's title, Melting Pot, they can be controversial. Did Lizzie Kander want European immigrants to abandon their customs and values to fit into life in America?
I think that at the time, you know, this is kind of the backdrop is domestic science. So I think she wanted them to be able to be part of the current American culture. But she also was really what I called a culinary pluralist. So she saw that there was an opportunity to demonstrate both that America is multi-ethnic, multi-religious, made up of people from all kinds of places. And when she creates this cookbook, it's incredibly broad. It has tons of recipes from all over, including Jewish recipes. And it's a way of expressing that Jews have a place in this, you know, grand tapestry of America. And she said this was made up of recipes from all nationalities because that is what America is.
Hmm. Lizzie Kander served as the Settlement Cookbook's visionary leader for 40 years. And then on July 24th, 1940, you write about the headline in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel that reads, "Civic Leader is Dead." What happened to the community and the movement that Kander built after she died?
Well, they rallied after really mourning this loss because it was a collective of women that worked on this project for so long. She was the sole person who was there from the beginning to her death. You know, they said she was testing recipes the day she died, you know, that this was just something that was a labor of love. Was really important to her, and they were determined to keep it going. So they had created the Settlement Cookbook Company. They had a charter. They were giving a lot of money to the Milwaukee community, and they continued on. Eventually, Sarah Ettenheim, who was the daughter-in-law of someone on the original board, took over in Kander's place and really pushed it to become sort of the global phenomenon it was, even though it had already been internationally received. Ettenheim ultimately secured a distribution deal and then a publishing deal with Simon & Schuster.
And the final Simon & Schuster edition, that comes out in 1991, I believe. What were these cookbooks like at the end of their run?
Well, I mean, they changed a lot over time. And in Kander's lifetime, they just continued to expand. They got bigger and bigger. Once Simon & Schuster was involved, they were like, you know, you can't just keep printing cookbooks. You have to have like 35% of it has to be different, you know, or be changed in some way. So they slowed down and they changed a little bit. So in 1965, the book is radically revised. It's this really cool looking cover, very retro and mod, and it's very chatty in a way that the original ones were not. It was a very encyclopedic, no-nonsense cookbook. And Julia Child and The Joy of Cooking really changed the way cookbooks were written. I think that the subsequent copies of the Settlement Cookbook changed accordingly. And by the way, that is why this is such a fascinating project, because you go from 1901 to 1991, you really can look at almost a century of American history through these cookbooks. The last one is pretty different from the rest of them, and it's the one that was not actually done through the Settlement Cookbook Board. Mm-hmm. Everyone had pretty much retired a few years prior, and Simon & Schuster consulted with them and worked with them when they put together this cookbook, but it was really sort of a reboot.
Nora, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. This was great.
Nora Rubel is a professor in the Department of Religion and Classics at University of Rochester. Her new book is Recipes for the Melting Pot, The Lives of the Settlement Cookbook.